Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Living for truth, living in untruth. Human life is meant to search the truth. The search for truth is the title of one of the essays, which seems to be a transcribed lecture of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in the book Sri Chaitanya's Teachings. The search for truth is that which distinguishes humans from animals. Animals can have no conception of an ultimate truth, an ultimate reality. They are simply concerned with ahara, nidra, bhaya, maithun, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Many humans are also. So according to this analysis, such humans are not really humans at all. The search for truth distinguishes humans from animals, exalted or humans, or humans who are properly using their human form of life, from humans who have just come up from the animal species and are just going down to them again because they are not interested in searching the truth. And the search for truth also distinguishes genuine spiritualism from dogmatic religion. This is an essential point which is going to be the basis of this discussion. That truth, we are meant to be truth seekers as members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the most august Acharya in the line of Mahabhagavats, going back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and beyond that to Lord Brahma. They all gave the truth. We are all meant for living for that truth. If we don't live in that truth, then we live in untruth. So, anyone genuinely seeking the truth, anyone who's actually sincere, should recognize it when it is presented. Srila Prabhupada often said that just as people from other countries go to America for higher mundane education, so persons in the West, they should recognize that here is higher spiritual knowledge, that which is presented by Srila Prabhupada, and not dogmatically stick to what they consider to be reality or to be religion. There are many people who, although they may not have had any contact with devotees, simply by reading Srila Prabhupada's books, or just one of the books, or even a few lines, are immediately struck that this is reality, this is an exposition of reality, this is of a nature of something that we've never had contact with before, but that we immediately can understand that this is reality, this is what I need to be in contact with. That should be, if anyone's really sincere, whether they're to understand reality, they should appreciate that unmitigated reality which is flowing in every drop of ink in Srila Prabhupada's books and in the spaces in between also. Whether one's a Christian, an atheist, a Muslim, a Hindu, or whatever, even if one had previously had no interest in higher matters whatsoever, they can immediately come in contact with the absolute truth which is presented in Srila Prabhupada's books. I remember my own excitement on discovering that that in Srila Prabhupada's books, and my excitement in discovering the devotees. We say discovering, it's something like Christopher Columbus discovering America. It was already there, but from his point of view it was, or from the Western point of view, it was discovered. So, it's so exciting, because having spent all my life and how many millions of life in superficiality, the compelling force of the clear understanding of the nature of this world, the nature of God, the nature of who we are, the nature of our relationship with God. Everything is outstanding, just leaping off the pages, as the saying goes. So, especially having been raised in southern England, where people, British people, are known to be polite, but from an insider, it's a lot of superficiality. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, that insincere people, they say one thing, but they harbor something else in their heart. But there's no such thing in Srila Prabhupada's books or in his devotees, as I found. They're very straightforwardly, clearly dedicated their lives to the ultimate truth, who is Krishna. There was straightforward dealings between devotees, at least as I remember it. There may have been some politics going on, but at least in the dealings with me, who was at that time called a new bhakta, although we didn't use those terms in those times, it was exciting to be with such genuine people. However, religion is meant to mangle the truth. Of course, religion is meant to expose the truth, but the actual fact is that religion throughout the ages has been the agent for mangling the truth. Just like in Christianity, Jesus came. He didn't start a religion. He said to love God with all your heart and soul. That is his most important instruction. But then some Christians came along and they repackaged the whole thing and said that, well, they made this whole dogma that Jesus himself is God, he came to die on the cross to take away all our sins, you have to believe in that and then you're saved, and if you're not, you're damned. What's come to be known as the Roman Catholic Church, they identify the church with God, so you have to be in the church and follow the church. And what the Pope says is supposed to be, according to them, is supposed to be infallible. And thus they made a religion. Because the actual truth, as Jesus said, if you want to be like me, They didn't want to be like Jesus. They wanted to use Jesus to justify their sense gratification. They reinterpreted the Bible to justify meat eating, to justify slavery, to justify killing and torture of non-Christians. And in this way, they mangled the message of Jesus. The genuine knowers of the truth, there are many, there have been many throughout the ages, mostly in India, actually. India is the land of spirituality. They present the truth, and insincere followers, they repackage it. So you end up with a religion that mangles the truth. And so you end up with just believe what we, the church, says. And not to try to be like Jesus, not to follow in his footsteps of being saintly, but just do what we say, just believe what we say. So, we in ISKCON should not make the same error. We should always seek the truth. Now, as long as Srila Prabhupada was present, this wasn't really an issue. Everything was clear. We could always ask him for clarification. Of course, within ISKCON, some of the followers, they misrepresented the teachings. Just like one GBC member, his wife had chicken offered to the deities in New York, and that was going on for some time until devotees finally spoke out about it, and it was clarified by Srila Prabhupada that this is not correct. But Srila Prabhupada himself, there was no question in anyone's mind except one rascal, actually, who Srila Prabhupada, maybe he was the only devotee who Srila Prabhupada rejected, formally rejected, but there was no doubt in anyone's mind that Srila Prabhupada is the representative of the absolute truth. He's absolutely trustworthy. There's no difference between him inside and outside. He doesn't have any motive to promote himself or to do anything but to give Krishna and Krishna consciousness day and night. Unfortunately, shortly after Srila Prabhupada left, some of our leaders made what is now recognized as a major error. Retrospectively, you might say, well, it was done with good intentions, but whatever, it was a major error that had a serious, I mean, just devastating effect on our society that is still being felt today. They declared that 11 of the senior disciples of Srila Prabhupada were as good as Srila Prabhupada. Each one of them was declared to be a Mahabhagavat. Unfortunately, Mahabhagavats are not that common, and you cannot make a Mahabhagavat by declaration. And although, again, I would say, at least in the beginning, largely in good faith, they really tried their best to represent Srila Prabhupada. But because they made the mistake of thinking that to do so, they had to somehow or other, by imagination or declaration or whatever, be Mahabhagavats with all the regalia of worship and their words, this point that their words considered to be fully, their words and actions considered to be fully sacred, as were those of Srila Prabhupada, it led to disaster with the fall down of most of them, the fall down from the regulated principles. Very sad that devotees that Srila Prabhupada placed so much faith in and who were his best men, you could say, they became victims of a mistake, a mistaken policy. They invented a myth that these devotees are as good as Srila Prabhupada, they're Mahabhagavats. And as soon as the myth was invented, then truth was lost. Now, of course, all of the truth wasn't lost. They weren't preaching anything that was wrong. I mean, the basic philosophy, they preached to chant Hare Krishna, to give up sense gratification. The philosophy of Krishna consciousness they taught in the proper way, but there was some serious mistake in the application, and thus myth entered our society. Now, of course, anyone who's representing the previous acharyas, they are as good as them in one sense, but it should be understood in what sense they are as good as and in what sense they are not. Just like the jiva in one sense has the nature of God and in another sense doesn't. And if you only emphasize one side, then you grossly misunderstand and you actually become an offender to Bhagavan. If you only emphasize the oneness. So in the same way, any guru, any Vaishnava who presents the teachings of the previous acharyas intact, in that sense is as good as them. But at the same time, we have to see that there is a difference in purity and behavior, and it's not that everyone is condemned to be on a lower level or that one cannot come to a higher level. But those who are on a lower level, it becomes mythology to equate them with those who are on the higher level just by wishful thinking. It's something like the Christian's mistake of equating Jesus with God. Then, although the teachings of Jesus are very good, the whole understanding becomes imbalance. Now, it's true that Vaishnavas, especially preachers, and especially those who give shelter to others by initiation are special. We shouldn't try to deny that. That is Vaishnava philosophy. That's Krishna's understanding, which he has given to us. Acharyang mang vijaniyan. It is true that Vaishnavera kriya mudra bigeha nabhujoy, that we should be cautious in judging Vaishnavas, because simply by punditry or book learning, we cannot understand everything that they do. It is true, apichet sudara charo bhajate mamananya bhak sadhureva. Such, even a person, even if he behaves abominably, is properly situated if he's fixed in the service of Krishna. It is true that we should not commit offenses to Vaishnavas. These are all essential truths. But it is also true that Shastra teaches to discriminate between devotees who are properly situated and those who are not, those who are Mahabhagavats and those who are not, those who are in all respects properly representing the parampara, and those who are not. It is also true that previous acharyas have warned us against the misuse of the teachings of Krishna consciousness, the misrepresentation called presenting the wrong understanding is called apasiddhanta, and acting on the basis of that, forming groups, acting on the basis of misunderstanding, those groups are called apasampradaya. So our previous acharyas have warned us about that. And it's also true that Srila Prabhupada said that our movement could not be spoiled from the outside, but it could be spoiled from inside. And it's also true that we nowadays often, of actually for many years, since shortly after Srila Prabhupada passed away, that of course passed away, that should be understood in a conventional sense. It's also true that we say, within our movement, we say things privately about certain individuals, while publicly subscribing to their being highly elevated devotees, which we know to be not wholly true. That means we're ourselves being somewhat superficial, isn't it? Of course, there are people who say publicly, they make public statements about the certain leaders of our movement, but you can't get away with it within ISKCON. Within the society, there are taboo websites which faithful members of ISKCON are not supposed to go to because they're considered anti-ISKCON. But it seems that many members of ISKCON, even leaders surreptitiously, at least go to some of these taboo websites. And which are supposed to be anti-ISKCON, although being anti-ISKCON and being anti what ISKCON now stands for might not necessarily be the same thing. This should be considered. Now, examples of privately among trusted individuals saying things which we would not like to say, or we wouldn't say publicly. I'll give some examples of that. I'm not going to go into much detail because I want to give some examples just to, so that those who are interested, those who are listening to this lecture can know what I'm talking about. Sometimes if you don't give some real examples, then it remains rather vague about what you're talking about. At the same time, I don't want to be too explicit. One reason is, so as not to make offenses, although I'm running the risk of making offenses by saying all that I've said so far. This is a very real consideration that even if what is said is true, to disturb the minds of devotees can constitute somewhat of an offense. Is that a fact, that speaking the truth can be offensive? Well, it can be perceived as such. And then when devotees are, they feel offended, then you can't discuss anything more with them. So certain things need to be said, but sometimes because of sentiment or whatever, if you say them very directly, the effect isn't there. So I'm just going to try and say a few things as directly as I can. You can say touching the borderlines, or maybe going over them a little bit without trying to pinpoint any individuals. Another reason that I can't—it's best not to be very explicit here—is that it's not worth it for what you might call the political fallout. That I and several of my disciples who live and practice Krishna consciousness and preach in areas which are dominated by some of the personalities who I will allude to, they're already suffering for having, of course no one will say this, but it's kind of understood, they took initiation from, why didn't you take initiation from our guru? So they're already suffering from that, and they would suffer more if I were perceived as being against or critical of certain persons. But again, it should be understood that being critical is not necessarily being against. Sometimes being critical can be the sign of the greatest friend, but it's a superficiality to think otherwise. But anyway, it is somewhat ironic that also that I'm, in giving one or two examples, I'm not being so explicit when we're talking about being truthful and not being superficial. Of course, truth, what we're talking about here is not in the legal or empiric sense of that of a lawyer or a scientist or a historian, whatever. Truth is, in absolute terms, is that what Krishna wants it to be. Truth is that Krishna is the ultimate reality, and unmotivated bhakti to him is the proper duty of the jiva. So, talking about these, let's go over to these examples. Privately, among devotees, it's within our movement, it's accepted that some of the leading gurus in our movement, they have what we might call initiation addiction. It's like atyahara, the first of the six bad qualities that destroy devotion. Atyahara, eating too much or collecting too much. So it is widely perceived that some of our, of course, it may be that many of the initiating gurus in our movement, including myself, suffer from this to some extent, like a desire to have more disciples, which increases your prestige, your income, like this. So, those who are perceived as such, it might be that they're doing it all. When I say that they're overly eager, I mean I've heard senior members of our movement use terms like proposed to, which is a term used when a man proposes to a woman for marriage. I've heard them use the term proposed to. It means that such and such a guru has suggested to the to people that those uninitiated devotees should become their disciple. And, in the past at least, some gurus were known for handing out badges with their picture on it, with a superimposed halo around the head, passing them out to newcomers, whoever was willing to take them. And at least devotees, they're generally not, they're awed by big leaders, so they would take them. And I don't think any leaders are doing that nowadays. There's a GBC rule against it, but you still do see some such badges being worn. So it might be that those who are perceived as being like having what could be called initiation disease, they might be doing it all out of a pure desire to benefit the jivas. But then we tend to think, maybe it's some mixed motive. They're very good devotees. They work very hard. They're dedicated to preaching and spreading Krishna consciousness. But it seems that it's not just to myself, like I say, these things have been discussed privately for years. It seems they have some other kind of motivation also. Because many times it seems that they don't instruct their disciples very well. So what is this... if you're really want to act for the benefit of them, you shouldn't just initiate many, but you should see that they're well trained. But I see that many... It used to be that I was upset that devotees in our movement, they wouldn't say anything against, and they using contraceptives, going to kami movies, watching TV, eating kami food, going to kami restaurants. But now we even hear that certain leaders, they tell newcomers that you should, newly married devotees, you should have contraceptive sex, you should go to kami restaurants and so on and so on. You should, you need to do this. So, the guru should instruct. So, I'm just saying this as one example of how we have incorporated untruth, because some of the big gurus, there's this kind of hype about them that they're super Mahabhagavats, and well, it might be true, but like I say, I don't want to be offensive, but maybe I'm just cursed to be offensive or whatever. It may be perceived as being offensive, but I just don't see the same fixation in Krishna consciousness that Srila Prabhupada so naturally had. He was always speaking the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. I mean, we see many books or memories of Prabhupada in which they're talking about Srila Prabhupada. He was so loving, so kind, and that's true. But one very prominent feature of Srila Prabhupada's character, which is not mentioned much and not attempted to be followed much in many cases, that he was always teaching the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. He was teaching devotees how to be Krishna consciousness. And he was very strong on following the four regulated principles, on that devotees and leaders especially should rise early, attend Mangal Arati, and attend temple programs, and so on. So, we often hear about our modern day devotees who are supposed to be, or are said to be by some to be Mahabhagavats, that they're very kind and they're very loving, and they may be trying their best to be like that, but the natural fixation in Krishna consciousness and the symptoms of a Mahabhagavat of taste for the holy names, distaste for any form of sense gratification, including that for personal glorification. We should see if that is, which was so apparent in Srila Prabhupada, we should see if that is there and wanting to strictly follow the line of the previous acharyas and not introduce any aspects of karma kanda or mayavad. Srila Prabhupada, he wasn't just loving and kind in the sense of some what we imagine a saintly person should be like, but he was also very strong in presenting the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and protecting his movement from all kinds of philosophical and behavioral deviations, which I don't see in our leaders today. So if we say these things, definitely many devotees are going to be upset that why are you criticizing and this and that. Even devotees who are, you know, philosophically strong, they read Prabhupada's books and they're good in understanding and explaining the philosophy, but they're often upset when we say these things, because I guess, I don't know, in their heart they must know that their guru or whoever is, you know, there's something not quite right there. It may be like 90% right, 95% right, or 98% right, but there's something not quite right, which doesn't really fit with everything we know from Prabhupada's books, but we just, you know, we just don't want to face that. We'd rather live in a dream, and being woken up is too painful. So that's it. Then we've accommodated untruth or mythology. Again, you can say that's how I see it. Others may see it differently, because of course a lot of this is very subjective. You can't empirically measure someone's motivations. But we do have guidelines from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, which we should apply. So it's universally recognized in our movement that the Zonal Acharya era, or the whole idea of Zonal Acharyas was a mistake. Although we never really purged or removed much of the mistakes that went with it. We've never really had a very deep, or attempted to have a very deep understanding of Guru Tattva within our movement. There's this. We appear to have incorporated some mythology, and it may be very difficult to perceive. Also, actually, for absolute newcomers who are a bit intelligent, some of them may perceive it very easily and just go away. I mean, I know cases of people who have come and they're attracted by the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. They find Prabhupada's books, you know, just superb. But then shortly after they start, or even immediately when they're coming and they're just trying to understand or find out what Krishna consciousness is about, someone tells them, well, you have to take initiation from my guru. And then someone else comes and tells, no, you have to take initiation from my guru. And they're just disgusted and they go away. There are many cases like that. Or those who have been in the movement sometime, they may be very good in philosophy and understanding the books, but they like to live in a dream in some regards, and that dream is a very it's highly supported by everything within ISKCON. I mean, our movement profess the highest truth. The books of Srila Prabhupada, they are unmatched in the professing of the highest truth. There's no comparison. Our movement is very solidly on the basis of truth. So if someone is claimed to be a Mahabhagavata, of course we don't often say that nowadays, but it's we don't directly say as we used to say in the Dzogchenracharya era, but it's often without using those terms. I mean, other terms are used. Living saint is one I just recently saw, which, okay, may be true. Living saint may be true. I mean, but then anyone who is seriously practicing Krishna consciousness is a living saint. So, but the in Prabhupada's books, there's the descriptions we have of gurus are of, you know, self-realized persons. And Srila Prabhupada also said, generally it is of, you know, highly self-realized persons. And Srila Prabhupada said that those who are not on the fully liberated platform, but who are strictly following those who are on the liberated platform, they can also act as gurus. So the gurus within ISKCON are, generally if we discuss this, we'll say that, yes, we're acting on the, we're not fully liberated, but we're following Srila Prabhupada. And in this way, we want to, in this way we are gurus. But then, in practical dealings, or it's presumed, many of the gurus in ISKCON are presumed by their followers, and this is especially in India and among Indians, I would say, maybe among Eastern Europeans and Russians also, maybe the hard-headed Westerners, the maybe not so, what do you want to say, maybe not so easily fooled, not so naturally devotional. Being naturally devotional can be disadvantageous also if it's not backed up by solid Shastric understanding. So yeah, it's just presumed that their gurus are Mahabhagavats, and it's a bit of a conundrum because there's no description in Shastra of half gurus, or that a guru, if he's not on the, you know, very topmost platform, that he should not be respected in any way other than the highest. I mean, Krishna says, Acharyam mang vijani annavamanyeta karichit. The Acharya should be respected as good as me. And the Acharya in the description, the type of Acharya that Krishna is specifically referring to in this verse from Bhagavatam is the guru who has a few disciples, lives in the forest, few brahmachari disciples. That would fit the description of the acharya whose Krishna is referring to in that verse. So, yeah, one is supposed to surrender to one's guru. Of course, you may say, well, this is all that I'm saying is supporting the Ritvik idea, but it's not. I've spoken elsewhere about this, and not just me, of course, there's so many refutations of this. It's just an examination of reality, or the fact that maybe it just by necessity, is it just the fact that we're living in an institution that we have to adopt some myths? Is that a fact? I would hope not. Now, this all might sound very offensive to some to say all this or to even think like this. But there is a difference between a sincere, hard-working, somewhat advanced devotees who are pushing forward the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who are no doubt great souls. But there is a difference between them and the fully realized Mahabhagavats on the level of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And that difference should be seen. We may say to overemphasize the difference or to point out the faults of others is offensive. We don't want to point out the faults of others, but we also don't want to suspend our discrimination. There's no harm in saying that such and such devotee is a very good devotee. But why hype up others to be something that they are not? To say that someone is a sincere follower of Srila Prabhupada and a preacher in Srila Prabhupada's mission, that in itself is very high praise. That's a very exalted position. But it doesn't mean that one is a Mahabhagavat. So my contention is that we have deified myth. We've brought in dogma and myth, which presides over truth. Oh, another important point. I'll just backtrack a little bit. We're saying that it's offensive to say these things, but it's also offensive to equate those who are not on the Mahabhagavat platform with those who are. If we think that someone who is a good, hard-working, sincere, good preacher, but not on the self-effulgent acharya on the level of Srila Prabhupada, if we don't make or if we try to just pretend that they are on the same level, that's actually offensive to Prabhupada and devotees on those level, and it makes Prabhupada seem less than he is. So that's also offensive. So then we're in the danger of making everything cheap, just like in Christianity. Instead of really striving to be a pure devotee, as Jesus taught, we say, well, you just believe in Jesus, and Jesus is merciful; he saves us. And we have this philosophy entering our movement that such and such is so merciful. He's not strict. He's not so, you can just be his disciple, and without following strictly, just because he's merciful, then you'll get Krishna prema. This is a kind of Prakriti Sahajya philosophy or so. Like Christianity, where they de-emphasize the endeavor to be actually pure and actually fully dedicated to Krishna, and promote that you can have sense gratification and be godly or have the blessings of the pure devotees in all respects. So this is very dangerous, actually. I mean, you say this is just unnecessary fault-finding. Why are you saying this? Others are not saying this. Well, I'm saying this because others are not saying this. And it's very dangerous. I mean, such thoughts that, just like the Christians, just believe in Jesus, that Jesus died for you, just believe and then you're saved. This is for lazy-minded people who are not sincere. There is a social pressure within our movement to go along with this, to not speak publicly about these things. Why you don't have public laundry mongering or whatever it is. But we never say these things, and it's just kind of presumed. I mean, there are those who are within our movement saying these things, such and such is, you know, such a great devotee, he's, you know, most merciful, and Mahabha, at least among themselves, they may say Mahabha, all the dealings they had with Srila Prabhupada said, and then their pictures are distributed everywhere, sometimes, you know, biographies, autobiographies, which all these things, they may not be bad in themselves, but it just builds up a whole hype, we can say, which creates, like I'm saying, an atmosphere of some superficiality. That things, why is it, this is my point, that why is it that we say things privately? We know there are things that are wrong. And actually this guru thing, it's only one example, but there are many other things also. But it's a clear example of something that we often discuss, you know, what you might call senior devotees, they often discuss among themselves privately, but there's a taboo against discussing them publicly. Somehow we just can't handle it. We can't imagine to say to that so-and-so has got, you know, this anartha. And we just presume that everything in our movement is okay because the kirtan is going on, the aartis are going on, books are being distributed. But, when the anarthas of leaders become institutionalized, or the wrong practices that they introduce become institutionalized, it's misleading people in the name of the holy, pure sampradaya. Just like, to give an example from the past, it's difficult to give examples from the present, because if you say so, then you'll be considered offensive. But in the past, some leaders who at the time were considered, you know, super exalted, they introduced, instead of selling Srila Prabhupada's books, they introduced that devotees should sell paraphernalia, things like paintings painted in, purchased in Hong Kong, cheap paintings, which they would go door to door and tell people these are original paintings by local artists and get very good profit, produce lots of money. Again, the intention might have been good. The idea, we get lots of money, we build temples, we can give out books instead of going through all the difficulty of selling them very slowly with little profit. Let's generate money and give out the books. It may have been good intentions, but it was a deviation from what Srila Prabhupada said to do. He said to distribute it. This is now fully accepted by everyone that this was not what Srila Prabhupada wanted. He said to distribute books. Many devotees fell away from Krishna consciousness. Many of those leaders fell away from Krishna consciousness because you don't get the Krishna conscious taste from selling paraphernalia. They do from selling books. Some devotees managed to come through, but many fell away also. And overall, it was seen to be not a good policy. So that was a deviation, and it's recognized now as a deviation. Can we not learn from the past that if there are things going on which are, you know, a lot, okay, at that time also, the RTs were going on, the japa was going on, many of the right things were going on, but certain things were introduced, some which became like due to the anarthas of certain leaders. Can we not now see that there are certain things introduced due to the anarthas of certain leaders, instead of living in this imagination that everything that they do must be perfect because they are Mahabhagavats? It's round the wrong way. Someone's a Mahabhagavat, or someone's qualified, never mind Mahabhagavat, someone's qualified as a guru because they do what Prabhupada said to do. And if they introduce something different, well, maybe it's inspired preaching, but we've had a lot of introductions that were considered inspired preaching, and in the end it was seen to be a disaster. So can't we openly discuss these things, or do we have to accept again and again and again, we have to go along with various myths of everything being all right when we can see it's not all right, but we can't discuss it publicly because we are living in an atmosphere of superficiality where we know something is not true, or we allow ourselves out of laziness to be indoctrinated to believe that it is true. But this is you know, it's a crime against the truth, against the parampara, to in the name of the Shastra and the Acharyas to present things which are not according to their directions and what they wanted. And by doing so, we don't, our movement won't have the strength, we won't get dynamic devotees who are, you know, they're willing to give everything for promoting the truth. If the leader himself has the anartha of this initiation disease, then he won't attract people who are fully dedicated to the truth. He'll attract, if he has this, what is after all some material desire, na dhanam, na janam, to some, you know, to like have more and more and more and more followers. Again, there's no harm with having more and more and more followers, but if they're properly trained in Krishna consciousness, but there may be a harm for someone to have that desire that I should have more and more and more followers. So those that come, they tend to become at least tinged with that anartha, and then from that so many others may come. The desire to be known as to have your name perpetuated as a great acharya, and then, you know, to be known as a great saintly, it's all what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warned against, labha puja pratishtha jato upashaka gon. So we don't get, you know, with this kind of presentation, or if we present Krishna consciousness as some kind of Hinduism or social welfare work, we're not going to get people who are, you know, eagerly searching the truth. Or even if we do get good people who come on the basis of Prabhupada's books, either they'll go away seeing that our movement is not what it's meant to be, or they'll be converted into mediocre people. They come with great hope of finding the truth, serving the truth, and they become co-opted into some kind of religion, which has a lot to do with the truth, but at the same time is not wholly the truth. So the acharyas, they should present the dynamic truth to attract the sincere and not overlay it with a veneer of untruth. The philosophy in the books is compelling, but we have to live it in all respects for that philosophy to come through, to manifest. If we don't have Super Maha Bhagavats in our movement, there's no need to invent. We just say, okay, Prabhupada, he's a great acharya, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is a great acharya, and we're all following and the best we can. There's no need to invent something. Again, we'll just, if we do that, we'll get somewhat, you know, mediocre people. It seems in our movement we're not encouraging dynamic preachers, you know, sannyasis who'll, you know, go out and conquer the world for Krishna. We want, as our leaders, the quiet clerical types who won't disturb anything, who just toe the line. And those who do step outside ISKCON, not wanting to partake in the dogma, some of them become victims of Ritvikism, although I guess that'll go on, but it's not very attractive or bona fide. So, or they join some, you know, they become Sri Vaishnavas or members of some Gaudiya Math, which is okay. That's nice, but in some ways, but that's not going to change the world. And or they remain on their own. They don't get the benefit that Prabhupada wanted of this movement being, you know, fully focused on pure devotional service. They don't get the sangha. They don't get that this movement is meant to facilitate an atmosphere where everyone can come and be swept up in the Vaikuntha atmosphere. It's very difficult to produce that with just a few devotees who, because they don't want to partake in the untruth, go away. Or they fall away, and they may even think that, well, you know, Krishna consciousness is a nice idea, but it doesn't work. It's not practical. They may think like that. So, you know, our movement as it is today, why is it not so dynamic? Why can it not change the world? I mean, that's a very big question. Why are we not thinking nowadays, as Srila Prabhupada did, that Krishna consciousness should take over the world and change the world? We don't have the potent, we don't manifest the potency to do that nowadays. Why is that? Why is it not electric and dynamic? Of course, historically there may be many reasons posited for that, but there's no reason why today we can't be as dynamic as we were if we all just do what Prabhupada said and preach the same philosophy as he did and live according to it. Then there's no reason why we shouldn't be dynamic enough and confident enough to change the world with the elixir of Krishna consciousness, instead of what we see, instead that our movement is being compromised in so many ways to simply be a mediocre part of this mediocre failing society. We no longer have the vision to change the world, nor the willpower, or the faith to do so. We're we're content if we go to some interfaith conference and get a reputation for being something like Mother Teresa or the Dalai Lama. Now again, you may say, well, this is very offensive, but again, many leaders in our movement will privately agree with what I say. Many of the things that I've said in the past which are controversial, many leaders have privately told me that they agree with it, but openly they won't say. It's what's going on? Do we prefer to live with lies? Do we think that these are necessary evils of the institution? Maybe it's like that, because you know, if you want to start pinpointing certain things, it may create such a disturbance, you might think, well, it's not worth it. You know, so many devotees will get disturbed and they may go away and there'll be so much infighting and all. But if you don't talk about it, what's the worst of two evils? That we're going off on a tangent, creating something like a church, like the Catholic Church, in which you just have to believe what the church, to be a good Catholic, you have to believe what the church says. That's the main thing. Not that you try to follow in the footsteps of Christ and be a saintly person like him. Is that happening to us? I'm afraid of that, and that's why I'm saying these things. Again, I think anyone who has, or many devotees who may care to listen to this will recognize that there is at least some truth in this. There's also another factor which many will point out, is that I myself am far from perfect. I have so many anarthas. And that's also true. But then that's true of all of us, and so should we all just keep quiet because we have so many anarthas and just let our movement be full of anarthas? No one shall say anything because we all have faults. And then there's no discrimination left. We have anarthas, but we should see on the basis of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, on the basis of the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, what is right, what is not right, what is true, and what is not true, and live on that platform. Otherwise, we are, although we are supposed to be living for the truth, actually in so many ways, we are living in untruth, and superficiality, with dogma, and not the whole truth, nothing but the truth. What is that? The whole truth, nothing but the truth. So, Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.